maybe I'm wrong on that. So can you just give us a little bit of background in terms of, you know, what your recent work experience is before you went, you know, making good money online and that sort of thing?
Yeah, absolutely, mate. I mean, essentially, I mean, I've had all sorts of jobs over the years. I used to be a guitar teacher. You know, I worked in all the sort of warehouses and factories. I worked for McDonald's for, albeit a couple of days. That didn't last very long. But I basically studied at university college. I studied economics and then did a sort of finance degree as well. And I went into financial services industry and ended up as a fund manager or portfolio manager. And did that for a number of years, and basically our team all got made redundant in the shortly after, actually, the sort of 2008 kind of downturn and okay. crash there. So really, by the, you know, we got made redundant, I think, at the end of 2009, and at that point I was really thinking to myself, well, you know, what I'm kind of at this crossroads now. This is a natural kind of crossroads that's come up. Should I, you know, continue in what I've been doing and get another job? I actually had a lucky enough to have a quite a good job offer at the time. Or should I continue with what I'd become interested in internet marketing? And basically, I kind of, you know, decided to do the latter, really, because I thought, well, you know, life's too short. And I always think that, you know, if we live to sort of 70 or 80 years old, it's kind of, you know, you want to look back on your life and think, well, I've got no regrets. And I thought, well, if I don't do it, regardless of the outcome, I would sort of regret that. I should just say this is the end of 2010, should I say, okay. not 09. But anyway, I decided to press ahead with the internet marketing. And really, to start off with, I did a lot of SEO, you know, like, as I see now with many beginners, you know, you kind of think there's just two ways to get traffic, which is either pay-per-click with probably with Google, or it's getting ranked well in Google SEO. Right. Really, I was at that mindset. I had no idea that there was kind of other ways to sort of generate traffic. It was completely new to me. So I spent a long time in 2010 working on SEO and doing a lot of keyword research and so on. And I had some success with that. In fact, I've still got a website, a tiny niche website, which was probably one of the first ones I ever built. And you'll probably laugh when you hear the niche, but it's actually on collectible metal lunchboxes.
Okay. Now, I don't mean to laugh at it, but the reason I'm laughing is because I actually sell one ClickBank product, and people who have read my blog might be familiar with this, but it's in a farming niche, and it actually teaches farmers how to raise a certain kind of farm animal. And right. you know, I consistently, like, I don't even touch that campaign. I'm advertising on Bing and Yahoo, and you know, it's the same sort of thing. I mean, I make a consistent income every month from that tiny, and it's actually not even one species. It's like a subspecies of animal. It's like a micro niche, and you would never think that you'd be able to make money from that, but that's how that's how micro you can get making money online. So
absolutely. And the thing, I mean, it is, you're quite right to laugh. I'm not offended at all. And it is a funny little area, really. But believe it or not, there are actually, I think, in the United States, about 3 or 4 lunchbox museums. And, the some of the old lunchboxes, you know, from, say, the 50s, have become quite iconic, and they're real collector's items and go for thousands of dollars. So, you know, I still actually get emails a couple of times a week, probably, from people, you know, wanting to know if I want to buy a lunchbox or this kind of thing. But, you know, more seriously, what it taught me was that SEO can be a hard way to generate traffic, but once you've done it, it really becomes passive. And I literally haven't touched that site for sort of 18 months or so, probably.
Sure.
And it still generates me mainly AdSense revenue, but also a tiny bit of Amazon stuff.
Right.
But the other lessons I learned, really, was that if you want to go into a niche, really it's important to make sure that, you know, the products you're selling are kind of worth, maybe not high ticket, but they've got a fair value. And the fact is that lunchboxes, you know, usually most of them go for just a few dollars. So you can imagine the kind of commissions, the tiny commissions I get from Amazon when they're sold, because of course Amazon have pretty low commission rates. And even on AdSense side, you know, the cost per click there for these kind of terms is very low as well. So even though, you know, it's kind of pocket change, might buy me a couple of beers a month or a few, bit more than that. But that was a real big learning curve for me. And I think, you know, for anyone starting out, it is better to kind of fail forward, if you like, and just get involved. Stop thinking too much. Just go and do something. And even if it doesn't work out, then that's a hugely valuable lesson in itself.
It is. And I think you picked up on a good point there, Rob, too. I mean, in my experience and from all the marketers that I know as well, in terms of making money, you're looking at one of two kinds of approaches. You either have to be in a niche where you might not get a lot of traffic, but the ticket price is quite high, as you mentioned, right? So that could be either affiliate commissions that are high, or if you have your own products that you're selling that you make a good profit margin off of. That's in the case where you don't have much traffic. The flip side, of course, is that if you're in a niche that you're not going to get paid much per transaction, whether that's a click or purchase, then you have to be in a niche where, you know, you get a lot of traffic, basically, and where you can rank number one or at most number two. So I think that's a great point. And a lot of people, it takes a bit of time to learn that. And as you said, the more you experiment and fail forward, then you finally kind of grasp that. So sorry.
No, not at all. No, I totally agree with that. And actually, the other thing, just very quickly, that I learnt was about actual trends. And in particular, you know, there's structural trends and the seasonal trends. So structural trends would be, you know, declining interest over a number of years, perhaps because something is just going out of favour, and maybe there's a new technology that's overtaking it. Something else is becoming more popular. But seasonal trends, of course, really important. So you have obviously things like Christmas where you can make more money, but interestingly, in tin lunchboxes, it's the seasonal trend is actually around the summer period, late summer period in the northern hemisphere. So in other words, the back to school season, and that's right. Actually when I'm kind of guessing, but I suppose parents are searching online for lunchboxes for their children, and maybe that rekindles an interest in, you know, an old lunchbox they had, and they start getting interested in collecting them. But if you look at those sort of search terms, you can see, you know, a big significant increase during that period. And that's, again, you know, wasn't going to make me any real money in that particular niche, but again, a really good thing I learnt that's benefited me subsequently.
I hope I'm on my iPhone now, so
yeah, it sounds, yeah. And you're very clear as well, yeah. I think so. No problem there.
Okay, so it wasn't as clear before.
No, it was totally clear actually before, but just saying that on the iPhone it sounds fine. There's a little bit of an echo, I think, on the line, but
there is. Okay. All right. So, and you're recording this, right?
I am. Yes. Yeah.
Great. Thanks very much.
If you want to recap or go from the top or whatever, there's no problem though. So happy to play it any way you would like.
Okay. So, sure. Well, why don't you just continue, and then we can splice things together, I guess, and okay. I'll just kind of include it in the show notes that first call. So
yeah, well, these things happen. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so you were saying that you were into SEO, and then you realized that, you know, there's more than just SEO. Although you had some success with your lunchbox website, and so when your discovery that there is more to traffic than just SEO and PPC, what was that discovery? What did you happen upon?
Well, I think it was just a natural sort of progression that I made, really, that was kind of, I started to learn more about marketing itself. And I think that's, you know, something that, you know, I often think sort of nowadays, having had more experience, that people who fail at internet marketing fail exactly at that. It is the marketing side. So it's so easy to get wrapped up in building nice websites and learning how to create various web pages and really feel good about that. But when it comes to actual traffic, it's just a major issue for so many people. And it certainly was for me, you know. So really, I mean, I kind of... firstly, in terms of the move in niches, I actually, my sort of the biggest success I've had online financially certainly is in the stock trading niche.
Mm-hmm.
And what I did there was create a product completely from scratch based on my previous experience as a portfolio manager in the city. And launched that. But the way I did that was nothing to do with SEO. It was, all the traffic came from joint ventures on that. And
okay.
I think looking back, I didn't realize it at the time, but, you know, I think for many beginners, it can be, you know, completely daunting. And you think, well, I just don't know anyone, you know, I couldn't get joint venture traffic. But there's certain ways that you can actually escalate your traffic. And this is kind of something which I've kind of called the traffic escalator principle, if you like. And the idea basically is that you shouldn't look at traffic strategies on their own in isolation, but mm-hmm. instead always look to escalate them into more powerful ones. And this is absolutely massive, and it's worked sort of so well for me, you know, and will... you know, continues to do so. And I think that it's almost like some people are missing a trick, or maybe they don't realize about how you can leverage traffic strategies going forward. So I'm happy to give you some examples of that and how people can apply it, but I don't know whether you want to talk about that now or whether you'd like to know more about the stock trading stuff or
sure, yeah. Actually, maybe what we could do is just back up a little bit. And I'm just thinking in terms of both my interests and also what my readers will be interested in, because the free report that you have on your website on 101 niches is very interesting. And I'm just curious to know, when you first started out and you were doing niche research to actually find a market to get into, and then which led you to your Lunchbox website and things like that, what were you doing then? In terms of niche research, and then sort of what did you learn and how did your process evolve over time?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So when I started, it was really, you know, I had Market Samuel Ryan. I was going through really trying to find, you know, some niche that no one else had found that had significant traffic but had low competition. And the competition is, you know, I defined in terms of, you know, the number of backlinks to the top sites and the quality and authority of those sites. And, you know, obviously looking at PageRank and things like this.
Right.
And I think, you know, broadly, that is a good strategy if and only if you want to use SEO as your main traffic strategy.
Right.
If you plan on using SEO in conjunction with other traffic strategies, which I would certainly recommend now, because SEO is great, but it's only one of many that you can use. So from that perspective, I don't think the competition element is as important as, you know, certainly I first thought when I was starting out. And I think certainly going forward, I mean, so many people are doing this now. You know, it's not like it was in 2006, 2007, which is before my time online, but people, I know people who've told me about this, when it was kind of almost like the Wild West, and you could go after and get traffic very quickly. It was very quick to get ranked. I think nowadays, with Google, every new Google update, you know, things are getting tighter, more competitive. So I think it's a bit more of a kind of joint approach by using some SEO but also some other traffic strategies are kind of quite sensible, and you know, you just get more bang for buck. So that's kind of how my approach has evolved, if that makes sense.
Well, that's pretty interesting, actually. So what you're talking about basically is a couple of different approaches to niche research and finding a niche. You know, that the first one is where it's based more on finding a low competition niche versus finding one where you might have some experience or where you have a passion for the topic or that sort of thing. And from what you're saying, it's your traffic strategy will actually depend on which of the two approaches you take. So, you know, in my Niche Sherpa course, you know, I teach people how to find low competition niches, but I also have some sort of probes and some questions people can ask themselves to figure out where their interests lie as well. And the one interesting distinction that you're making is that if you want to go after niches purely based on competition, then you're probably going to be relying more on SEO and that sort of traffic. Whereas if you're going after a market that you have some experience in and you have some a passion for, then you can translate that into other types of traffic as well. I'm assuming that's what you're getting at.
That's exactly it. You summarized that very well, Mo. Yeah, that's exactly it. So, you know, it's about being a little bit, smarter, but thinking a little bit broader than just kind of, I just need to find this untapped niche where, the traffic's really high, but the competition's low. Because the reality is there's so many people, think how many copies of Market Samurai there are around the world and how many people are constantly searching in it for these kind of things. So it makes sense to kind of take a step above that and think, okay, well, you know, SEO is definitely, you know, a valuable source of traffic, as I said, you know, particularly once it's going, after mm-hmm. a while it becomes passive, so it's very powerful. But in the meantime, you know, there's plenty of other things that we can do to actually kickstart the traffic quickly and gain some traction before, you know, we're sitting around for whatever months to actually, wait for Google to decide to send us traffic.
Well, that's a great point. So what you're talking about then is first of all, diversifying, which I strongly recommend anybody get into, but it's also getting some sort of quick successes to build a bit of confidence as well. So, you know, while you're waiting for maybe your AdSense websites to get ranked and to bring in some money, you can be working on another project, maybe building your own information product in a niche that you're familiar with and you have some experience with, and using, you know, joint venture traffic, which I think you're going to talk about in a second, to start making some money more quickly. So maybe let's get into that then, Rob. Maybe you can tell me sort of how you got into developing your own information product for the stock trading niche, and so how did you get into that in the first place?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's funny because when I first started online, I thought, well, what kind of experience do I have? And one thing was the guitar, because I used to be a guitar teacher for a few years, and I thought, well, I could, you know, put videos up and sell information on that. And I actually did have a little website which failed miserably on that. And again, I think that was a victim of free information, because if you want to learn the guitar, you know, go to YouTube and there's thousands mm-hmm. of free videos. So it's quite hard to sell information in that niche. The other thing that I thought, well, you know, I have a good knowledge of is obviously finance and trading and investing and that kind of thing, mm-hmm. which is a massively profitable area, online and offline. It's hugely profitable. But actually, at that point, I thought, you know, I really, that's kind of behind me. I want to do something completely different. So this is why I kind of went into tin lunchboxes and the guitar and these other things. But actually, further down the line, at the start of 2011, somebody, you know, a friend of mine suggested, he said, well, you know, you're probably undervaluing the knowledge you have, you know, because there's actually loads of people out there that would like to learn trading from home. You know, they haven't had the experience in a professional environment that you've had, you know, mm-hmm. and that's when I started to think, okay, maybe, you know, maybe I was being a bit of a knee-jerk reaction there, not wanting right. to do this. So I started to look into that and really found through a contact of a contact, somebody who, well, primarily one person, but they actually worked with somebody else, two people who had a huge mailing list, okay, and it's basically a business opportunity mailing list. But one of the opportunities that they market on is investing and trading. So they'd done numerous products before. So this is when the idea came up, once I started talking to them, was, well, maybe, you know, look, I've got the knowledge, but I haven't got any way of distributing it online or anything, but you've got the mailing list. How about we kind of team up? And really, that's how it started. So I put this product together. It's called Stock Market Sniper, and sort of based on some really trading strategies that I'd sort of developed partly in my job, in my old job, and I subsequently worked on them. So the product really was kind of a 20,000 word book. It was actually a hard copy manual. Started off as a PDF, and we actually did it as a hard copy manual that was sent out snail mail, and also a members area website. So that was literally WordPress, and, you know, a plugin to, so you could have a password and that kind of thing. And I created probably maybe 15, 20 videos for that. And that was it, really. Did some updates, did an interview with a trader, and a few little extra bonuses, but really that was it. So it was all about this strategy that I'd created.
Okay.
So that's the product, yeah.
So basically what you were doing then is you were parlaying your experience and your expertise in the stock trading industry into this information product, and then using these existing sources of traffic to promote it. So I guess that's why it took off pretty quickly, huh?
Yeah, exactly. So what happened was, really, we did that. I did not only created the product, but I created a kind of Jeff Walker product launch formula style three video launch. Although at the time I wasn't really aware of Jeff Walker, it was just kind of, you know, I'd seen these kind of things online. So the idea there obviously is that you have, say, three videos which are sent out, mailed out over the course of, say, a week, which really just provide free training and genuinely help people. So they get to know you, what you're about, you know, you give them some strategies that they can actually go away and really put into practice. So it builds that relationship, rapport, and trust with your prospects.
Sure.
And then we actually launched it. We did a 3-day, for 3 days we did a discount. 4 days, I think we did $79,000 in gross revenue in just that 4 days.
Wow.
Which was pretty amazing. So this shows you that, you know, if I was working myself and just me and the computer, there's no way that I could have done that, because I just didn't have access to the market. So I needed to team up with somebody else who did have the access to the market but hadn't got the product. And that's where this sort of mutually beneficial relationship comes from. And of course, that's nothing new to the internet. That's been going on for hundreds of years in business, you know, all over the world. So you can really do good things when you kind of put those put people together and create those sort of mutually beneficial situations.
Sure, absolutely. So just to back up again for a second, Rob, now some of my readers, they know what their passion is and they have some expertise in a certain niche, and then other people email me and they say, you know, I'm not really an expert in anything. You know, and they might know what their interests are, but they might not think that they're profitable enough to proceed, or they're just not confident that they have the expertise or experience in a niche to sort of create a product as you've done. So, you know, I have some ideas for what people can do in that situation, but I'm just curious to know what your ideas are. If a person doesn't actually think they have expertise in a certain niche, what can they do to create their own product?
That's an excellent question, and it's something that comes up a lot. I see a lot of people asking me that. So the first thing to say is that I don't personally agree, this is my own view, that you have to be passionate about a niche. I think the word passionate is probably one that's overused nowadays a bit too much. But, you know, you don't have to be passionate about it. What you do have to be is interested in it. to see yourself doing this 3, 6, 9 months down the line, because it's mm-hmm. so easy, and I fell into this trap more than once, is to go into areas, particularly when I was starting out, that I thought, oh, this is great, you know, there's some potential here, I can see the products, people are already making money, it looks like a great niche. But then, you know, a month, 2 months down the line, not really getting some success, I'm thinking, oh, I'm not really that interested in it after all. And, you know, the project falls by the wayside. And right. that's a classic thing that I think happens so much. So always, you know, if you're really excited about a niche, first of all, whether you're an expert or not, always think, what can I, you know, sleep on it for a couple of nights and think, will I really be interested in this in 6 months, or is it more of a 7-day wonder? So I just wanted to say that first of all. But in terms of if you're an expert, that can be good. It can be a disadvantage as well. And the reason for that is because if you're an expert, you kind of tend to know what you think is important. Mm-hmm. But what you think is important might not be what other people want. And it also, you know, it might not be what they're willing to pay for either. And the stock trading niche is a good example, because, you know, people are interested in stocks and end up learning all this kind of complicated technical analysis of price charts and different ways of trading. And they could write, you know, almost a thesis, an academic thesis on how to do it. Now, if you did that, it might be great information, but that's not what the market wants.
Exactly.
Right. And that's just one example, but I'm sure in many, almost all niches, that's the way. So first of all, you're not necessarily at a great advantage by being an expert. So the next thing is, if you're not an expert, what can you do? Well, the first thing is to go back to that previous point. As long as you're interested in it, that's mm-hmm. sufficient, absolutely sufficient. So the thing to do, and a lot of people have made a lot of money out of this, and that's really to go out and find existing experts in your niche and work with them. Now, you can work with them in a number of ways. You can, you know, get them to create a product. Mm-hmm. You can, you know, ask them for consultancy so you can learn enough to get yourself started. But really, the quickest way of all, I can't think of a better example, to create information products when you're not an expert is to do interviews.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I agree with you. And as a matter of fact, if I can just jump in here, I mean, you've said so many interesting and very important things here, Rob. The first thing is that you know you don't have to have a passion for a particular niche or market in order to make it go. And I 100% agree with you. I think this is a total myth that you have to have a passion for it, and it's been perpetuated by a lot of bloggers. You know, I work in, you know, my ClickBank products are in health niches, in one specific health niche, and I am not a doctor. I do not have a passion for that specific niche, and yet I've made a lot of money from it. I do have an interest in it, and I think the important distinction is that you have to have an interest in some aspect of the business that you're working in. So that can be either the subject matter of the niche, or it can be some aspect of the business. So it can be the marketing of it, it can be the traffic generation, etc. So I don't have a passion for, you know, the health products that I create and promote, but I do have a passion for the niche research that goes behind it, for, you know, the email marketing and for certain aspects of traffic generation. So that's one myth that you've just debunked there, Rob, that I think is great. And the second point that you've made, that you don't have to be an expert and that you can go out and interview other people, that's been my experience as well. Again, I'm not a doctor. I don't even have the health condition that my products are about. But what I've done is I've gone out and I've either interviewed myself or I've had experts or survivors interviewed, package those up as audio interviews, you know, videos and ebooks and things like that, and sold them. So, you know, it's actually on my blog, I call it niche journalism. So you're effectively being a journalist where you're going around and interviewing people who have the knowledge that you need and who are providing the answers to your target audience. So
that's excellent. Yeah, I really agree with that. And I think the only thing I'd add is that Well, maybe a couple of things. I mean, firstly, it's the kind of mindset that you have. So you don't have to create a product. You could do affiliate marketing, as you've just talked about. So you let other people create the products. You take a commission. And also, I think there's the mindset of being not necessarily, you know, you as the kind of expert, author, stage speaker, guru, but you can think of yourself as a publisher of information. And sure, if you think about it, this is what, you know, obviously what publishing houses do, right? They have, look at Dummies, for example, you know, which is actually a great place to do niche research. You can go there. The people that own Dummies, I mean, I don't know, but there's no way they're experts in any of those books that they put out.
No.
Right. So that what they're doing is getting other experts to create it. But you can do, and you know, this has been done in personal development, certainly in internet marketing and stock trading. Let's say you wanted to, it's basically just create products full of interviews. So if you wanted to do go into stock trading, for example, and you knew nothing about it, you could go out, find some prominent bloggers who blog on internet marketing, find 20 of them, email them all, say you're putting together an interview product, you'd like an hour of their time to go on Skype. My experience of doing, I don't know, probably 20 or 30 interviews in various niches is that probably 5%, if that, of people decline, because it's just, mm-hmm, they just want to be interviewed because it's nice to, sure, be asked, and it's maybe an ego thing, but also it's only an hour of their time, you know?
Yeah, it's easy.
And if they don't agree, then what you can do is offer them rights to use that interview as a bonus for one of their products. So that's an extra enticement. You can get them on board. If you contacted 20 people in stock trading, you'd get, I would think, 15 of them, even if they're fairly big names. Record the interviews and then package them up. And then once you've done that, you've created a nice sales page, you've got a product, then get back in touch with those 15 people you've interviewed and say, hey, look, this is a really great product we've created. Would you be interested in, you know, you're part of it after all, you know, thanks very much, mm-hmm, for that. Would you be interested in promoting this to your subscribers on your blog or to your email list in return for, you know, I'm going to pay you 50% commission? Or even higher.
Yeah.
So awesome. You know, something like that. And then what you can do then is build a list of customers, so not just freebie seekers, but customers, and then you can go forward and market more affiliate products to them or create your own products. And of course, by that stage, after having, I guarantee you, if you know nothing about stock trading, after you've interviewed 15 people on it, you'll know something, okay? So you got your learning curve will have you'll have transcended that learning curve significantly.
Wow, that's an awesome point. So effectively what you're doing is you're asking that, or you're recruiting the people who have helped you to create the product in promoting the product to their own customer base.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And this is, you know, kind of what I like to call this traffic escalator principle. It's one example of that. There's many other examples, but you know, always, whatever traffic strategy you do, try and think, how can I sort of elevate that and turn it into a more powerful one? So an example might be, you know, say blog comments. You know, a lot of people might dismiss blog comments as being a really poor traffic strategy. You know, the best you'll probably get is a 10 or 20 visitors, maybe, I don't know, off a blog comments and a tiny bit of SEO, but then there's a massive debate about whether it's a no follow or a not a non follow link or whatever. But the reality is, you know, many of the top people in any niche have, you know, many of them will have virtual assistants answering their emails, so it's very difficult to comment on them. But everyone from Frank Kern in internet marketing, any of, you know, all of these top guys in any niche, they all read their blog comments because they want to be in touch with their audience. So making a blog comment's a fantastic way to add value to their content and also get on their radar. So one good strategy would be, another example of this traffic escalator principle, is you start with a blog comment. Now, most people would give up there and go and do another blog comment. But what you want to do is try and add value. then maybe you can approach them and see if you can write a guest post for them, for example, which is something I've got, you know, thousands of visitors from, but also, you know, hundreds of signups to my email list from it. It's really, really powerful free traffic strategy. And you get great SEO from it because often you're published on the front page of a blog, you know. So you could do that. And at that point, they're much more likely to accept because they already know that you've added value to their blog through the comments. Then following that, how about you interview them on Skype? Okay, going back to our previous example. Then perhaps they've got a product. You could offer some free content for them. And, you know, before you know it, you've worked with these people. And, you know, you like them, they like you. And that's exactly the point where they will come and promote your product, you know, if you want to. So, and it all starts, the seed of that whole process in this particular example is just a blog comment.
That's a great point. And actually, I've experienced that myself. I received a lot of traffic from a couple of guest posts that I did on the ClickBank blog. As a matter of fact, a lot of people listening to this podcast probably came onto my blog, Keywords Blogger, from those ClickBank posts. And I received literally thousands of visitors from those too. So you're right. I mean, and that's a great point about starting with blog comments because, you know, if you send an email, most people, I mean, even just, you know, non-celebrities receive hundreds of emails a day, including spam. But how many blog comments would even a really, really popular blog get? Not nearly that many. So you're right. I mean, if you want to stand out, it's much better to leave comments on a blog. That's a great point.
Yeah, I think so. And there's other examples of this sort of escalation principle. So, for example, if you buy a product, again, most people would buy the product, maybe consume the content, possibly implement it, but that's it. But a great thing to do, always be thinking, well, how can I turn that into something more powerful? So if you buy a product from somebody, then if you liked it, well, send a testimonial back to them, you know, because often in testimonials, you can get your website name published. You know, that's happened to me in text testimonials, but also I've provided video testimonials for some people. Obviously, you only do this if you really find the product valuable. But I've provided a video testimonials, which starts with, you know, hi, this is Rob Cornish from gainhigherground.com. And they love, the product creator loves that testimonial. So they go and publish that and all their future customers see it. So, you know, again, that's going to take you, what, 20 minutes, half an hour, but it's passive traffic going forward. So there's lots of examples like that. One final one is I've done a fair bit of solo ads. So this is where, for people who are not familiar with that, this is where you would you find somebody else with an email list and you pay them money to actually mail on your behalf to their list and promote your squeeze page. So it's a good way, very, very fast way of gaining subscribers. So what I did there was, again, most people would just buy the solo ad and that's it. They wouldn't do anything more. But at that point, you've already got a relationship. So I actually, you know, one example was I approached that person I'd purchased the solo ad from and said, hey, look, you've already basically promoted my stuff, right? Because I paid you to do so. I've got this really interesting membership website. Because I have a membership website as well. How about you promote it, you send out another email and we'll do a webinar on this for your subscribers. And that's exactly what he did.
Okay.
And he sent traffic to that webinar. I did the webinar and we made sales. So again, not very difficult, but it's this whole idea of whatever you do, always try and think, is there a way that I can make this more powerful? And there's not always, but quite often there is.
Right. That makes complete sense. And I think a lot of us, you know, myself included, as you mentioned before, we think of traffic in terms of just two buckets, right? There's SEO and there's pay-per-click. And what you're talking about is really harnessing the relationships that other people have built with a lot of other, with subscribers, with their own customers, and harnessing that. And I mean, the joint venture model, which is what some people call that, you know, can be hugely powerful. And admittedly, I'm not very experienced in it, but it's something that I'm starting to do right now
with some other ClickBank vendors. But I think you've really nailed it on the head, Rob. That's a great strategy.
Yeah, and I don't want to sort of labour the point too much, but the only other thing I would say, because you just mentioned SEO, is that many of these kind of ideas have massive SEO benefits. So I mentioned guest posting, for example. You know, that can deliver huge, link juice to your site.
True.
Because somebody's deliberately linking to you. I mean, I've done interviews. I've interviewed other people where afterwards they've actually, on the homepage of their blog, they've provided a link to my site without me even asking. So, you know, it's things like that. I mean, you don't have to think, you know, if you're just starting out, oh, I've got to build massive relationships and go out in a suit and do big business deals at all. It's nothing like that. It's just, you know, just be friendly. And, if you buy a product, say, oh, I really enjoyed that. I'll send you a testimonial. You know, you can do it just typing. You don't even have to speak to some people to do it. So the joint venture is kind of a loaded term that kind of puts a lot of people off. But if you just think a bit beyond kind of you and your computer and think about the other people that are out there, that's when really good things can start happening in your business.
Sure. And I like the escalation concept. So it's not that you have to jump into, and I agree with you, joint venture is a loaded term. It's also quite intimidating to some people, I think, as well. I mean, it's more of just reaching out to people in your niche, for example. So that's a great concept.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, it is a lonely business. So there's many great things I love about doing business online. I absolutely do love it. But there are a couple of disadvantages. And one of them is that it can be quite lonely, particularly when you start out. So, if you ever feel that, then, you know, you're not alone. You know, there's so many, we've all been through it. So when you actually do get in contact with people and offer value first, rather than just asking, that's a massive mistake a lot of people make. When you offer value first, people love to hear from you because it's always good. Everyone, you know, is the same. You know, we're all just humans and we like to sort of network and get in contact with other people.
True. So just to kind of wrap up what we discussed so far. So we've covered niche research, finding a niche. So that's either looking for a low competition, high volume niches, or looking at a niche that you have passion or expertise in. We've looked at product development. So doing interviews, for example, doing interviews with experts, audio interviews, video interviews, that sort of thing, and packaging those up as a product. And then we've covered some traffic generation strategies as well, starting from, the typical SEO, and then getting more into reaching out to other people in your niche and trying to make use of their customer or subscriber list. So is there anything else that you wanted to mention, Rob?
Well, I suppose in terms of conversion and that kind of thing, some things which tend to work pretty well,
sure,
on that front. So I can talk a little bit about that, and that's related to kind of product launches and so on. But
yeah, absolutely.
Would you like to hear a little bit about that? Or
sure, that sounds great.
Cool. Well, I mean, essentially, you know, this kind of, we mentioned earlier about Jeff Walker and his product launch formula, which, you know, for people who aren't familiar, it's essentially the idea that you take a sales letter, so a traditional long form text sales letter, and turn it on its side and play it out through time. So you'll start by, you know, just introducing yourself or the idea, and then gradually, you know, the aim is to build trust and rapport with that customer, or that prospect, mm-hmm. should I say, to the point where really, you know, hopefully you don't have to sell at all, because they just decide that they make the decision that they actually want to come on board. So,
sure.
You know, there's a number of stages that sort of I used to do this. And, I've used this tactic several times and it works like an absolute dream. So if you have an email list in your niche, and I always recommend that, you know, even if you've got an SEO blog and you're just, you know, it's just a niche blog, if you can try and build an email list with with a free gift that you give away, because you will make more money that way, because you
absolutely
gain, repeat buyers. But you know, once you build that list, what you can do if you've got a product launch coming up is actually, first of all, just send out what I'd call, say, a rumor email. And this is something like, you know, look, there's something I've been working on for a while. It's going to go live on, say, Wednesday in a couple of days. I can't tell you anything about it right now, but please watch out for an email from me in a couple of days. And you could, you know, if you haven't got a list, you could do this on your blog. So, you know, you could say, okay, I'm going to announce it on my blog. But either way, that's really, really powerful, because it raises that curiosity level. So the engagement you get 2 days later when you actually do publish the information is so much more important. And I've used this in internet marketing niche and stock trading niche. It really does work. I think it would work in any niche, because it's just a sort of human kind of button that you're pressing, really. And then from that, I think that you know you want to go forward and start introducing the offer, and really kind of build up interest from the prospects. But you know, a couple of things that are really important. I think firstly, any kind of social proof that you can add in is really, really important. Now, I know, you know, the FTC sort of clamped down a little bit on some elements of social proof, particularly testimonials. But you know, there's nowadays there's so many other ways of generating social proof. So this can just be blog comments, it could be Facebook comments, Facebook likes, anything like that is really, really powerful. And you know, they don't even have to be, you know, you see these hypey testimonials in the internet marketing area where there is, you know, that I made whatever dollars, you know, in which is just crazy hype, right? And then it's like in tiny
$7 billion
writing, tiny writing, like results not typical. You can't do that anymore, and it's not a good idea anyway, because I think we're moving beyond the hype. We're getting more real online now. So
I know the cynicism is just the cynicism that I see from, especially from my readers, and even if you just go around, you know, the blogosphere, people, I really think that we're turning a point, and people are really rejecting those kind of, you know, very tacky and over the top sort of sales pitches. So.
Yeah, exactly. So you can certainly have testimonials where people had great experiences or they really liked the training. So anything like that is really super powerful. So that's the first thing, social proof. The second thing I'd say is reciprocity, which is really important. So this is the idea where if you do somebody a favor, they're much, much more likely to comply with your future requests.
Right.
And that sounds a bit kind of, you know, manipulative maybe. On this, I would recommend a brilliant book called Influence by Robert Cialdini.
I actually have a review of it and a synthesis on my blog, actually.
Fantastic. So go to Mo's blog for it if you're not aware of it, because it really is fantastic, isn't it?
It is. It's a classic.
Yeah, and I think, you know, reciprocity is another one. So if you can, you know, when I talked about what I did in the stock trading niche, and I've done this in internet marketing and other places, is always genuinely try to provide value. So if you can provide, say, a couple of golden nuggets of information that can be, that people can take away and genuinely use, that's absolutely so powerful, because it really builds so much trust, and you definitely will make more sales.
Absolutely,
you know, totally. So reciprocity is the second thing, and the absolute massive one that you know, I think has become even more important. I was talking to a marketer I know who is in the business opportunities marketplace online, and he's been in the game, I think, probably 10 years or so, and he said that 2011 and going into 2012, this has become, he's never seen it like this before. This is working, you know, incredibly well, like it's never worked before, and that is scarcity. which is another of Robert Cialdini's kind of, I think he has six weapons of influence that he talks about. Now, again, this is, all of these things can be abused. You know, we've talked about how social proof can be abused. Certainly, scarcity can be. And, you know, the typical things you see is like, oh, this is coming down on Tuesday night, and you go on Wednesday morning, it's still there. Or they make out, you know, some kind of false scarcity. And again, I think the game's changing. I mean, I personally would never do that anyway, because I just don't think it's, you know, I think the best way to go forward is just treat other people like you'd like to be treated yourself. But I don't think it'll probably be less effective anyway, that kind of scamming type scenario. But what you can certainly do is add genuine scarcity to it, and there's really three ways you can do that. Firstly, you can add a time element, so you can say this is only available until Tuesday, for example. Okay, and that, when you tell somebody that, they're interested before they even know what it is you're offering. So you know, you know, it's kind of like, say, look, Mo, you know, this thing's, it's going to go away in 2 days. You're like, okay, what is it? What, you know, it's human nature. You know, it's hardwired into us. So that's very powerful. You can also, the second way to add scarcity would be with a bonus. So this is something I've done before as well. So when I launched my membership site more recently at the end of 2011, I actually did it. So I added a personal one-on-one coaching session. If people signed up, you know, before a certain point. So after that point, the bonus was gone and they didn't get that. So that's another way. And then finally, the third way of adding scarcity, which again is I've used personally and it really works well, is price. So all you say is, this is what we did in stock trading. So we had that 4-day discount period, if you like, where it was 147, but after the fourth day it went up to 197. And when you do that, it's incredible how the sales come in, because initially, having done this several times with scarcity, you find when you announce it, you get an initial rush of sales, then you tend to get a dribble of sort of, you know, 2-3 whatever it is, people just buying sort of as the time goes on. And then literally the sort of 6 hours before the offer closes, there's a massive rush. And on more than one occasion, I've actually had people try to buy after the offer had closed and then email me going, oh, I'm really disappointed. I'm like, well, you've had kind of 4 days. You did know about it. But again, there's something very innate in human nature that the scarcity creates, not panic, but it's, I don't know, it kind of goes back to the caveman, cavewoman days when, you know, scarcity was a real thing about food and survival, I think.
Yeah,
and,
Well, scarcity, I think, makes things more valuable. I mean, that's, you know, that's one important aspect of it. And, you know, I mean, if anybody doubts that scarcity is part of human nature, I would tell them this. So take two young kids and put them in a room full of toys. And when the first kid picks up a toy, see what the reaction of the second kid is. You could have 1,000 toys in this room, and I know this because I have two boys. You could have 1,000 toys in that room. The first toy that is picked up by one of the kids will instantly become more valuable to the second kid, and they'll start fighting over it. Right? And I've seen this with my own kids, and I've seen, and I've thought about this because, you know, I'm also a student of Robert Cialdini, and, you know, his book is, like I said, it's a classic, and I actually use it on all my sales pages, in my email communication. I always think of those six principles and keep those in mind when crafting any kind of copy. But I've actually observed my kids and other people around, and, you know, the scarcity principle, it's absolutely part of us, and it will never go away because it's part of human nature, like you said.
Yeah, absolutely. So those things are really, there are others, and if you read the book, you'll find out much more. But, you know, for me, social proof, reciprocity, and scarcity are, if you use nothing else, that's really, really valuable. And we've talked about this in the context of a product launch, but it doesn't have to be a product launch. You can be launching a new blog. You could have a particular post that you really want people to engage with. you could be launching a new squeeze page or a free your new ebook that you're going to give away. But either way, you can use these principles, particularly, you know, like I say, with when you start with a rumor and then say, look, I'm going to do this in a few days. These kind of things, this is what I love about them, is they don't take up any extra effort. You know, like some of the traffic things we talked about, you can just do this. You haven't got to sit there and be building backlinks for 6 hours a day for 3 months. You know, there's little kind of subtle things that you can do when you study marketing and you learn marketing that can make a big difference. And I believe that put you kind of head and shoulders above many other people who are out there spinning their wheels.
Definitely. And the thing is, human nature never changes. So the classic marketing principles that are written in, you know, some of the classic marketing texts, those will never go out of fashion, and they'll never stop being effective, because I believe, anyway, I mean, human beings will continue to be the same, you know, in their nature forever, basically. So I just want to mention one thing for the listeners. Robert Cialdini, his last name is a little bit tricky. It's spelled Cialdini, so Cialdini. And again, highly recommend this book. So
yeah, me too. It's a really great read. I think it's more important than like the 4-hour work week or something like that, in my view, because it really is human nature stuff. And that's I think what we can get a little bit bogged down in, particularly with SEO. I remember 2010 when I was doing this really heavily, and I became sort of, you know, I was getting emails from marketers, you know, who clearly weren't using SEO themselves. No, they were building lists and doing joint ventures, but they were just selling SEO stuff to me, you know, which tells you a lot. But they were kind of, you know, telling me little, you know, piece of information, or there's a slight Google change, or we found this little loophole works. And I was getting so involved in that. And of course, 90% of it is just, you know, is ineffective and is a waste of time. So I think not getting bogged down in all that technical stuff and actually going back to, as you've just said, Mo, human, you know, principles that are always going to work because we're humans and we evolve extremely slowly. Mm-hmm. I just think that's really, really powerful, because studying marketing, right, is very, very powerful itself. And sort of ironically, that's the trick that I think a lot of people miss, particularly when people find it difficult to get traffic, for example, which is you know, something we've all struggled with, and I used to struggle massively with.
But to get back to your original point, I think you made a very important distinction there. So you can actually use these marketing principles to get traffic, but not in the way that most people think. It's not about learning SEO or PPC or whatever. You can use these marketing principles to approach potential partners who have established traffic sources, which I think is what you've done, right? So if you apply social proof, reciprocity, authority, all the other of the six principles, marketing principles, to actually trying to partner with people who have traffic, you can really shorten the time that it takes you to, you know, to make good money online.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just, you know, it's things like that. You know, if somebody bought one of my products and they sent me a testimonial, I would certainly publish that testimonial because it's beneficial to me. They've been a good customer, and I'd be more than happy to publish a link to their website. So things like that just don't take hardly any time, but it develops a rapport between two people that you could go on and work with. But it's also valuable in itself because it generates a little bit of traffic and gets your message out there. So things like that, I just think they're really exciting. And I used to hate all this stuff. My dream when I started was for me and my computer to sit in a dark room somewhere and never go outside and just do that. And I think people still hold on to that dream, where they think, you know, I'm going to be making, you know, secret loophole cash here where it's just me and the computer and all of that
in stuff. My underwear.
Yeah, well, or you know, whatever, but you know, that's the dream. But of course it's not like that, you know. So we need to get over that, and The good news is it just gets better and better and better. The further, was it Eleanor Roosevelt who said something, you should do something out of your comfort zone every day or something like that. And that's so true. So don't be daunted by all these things that we've talked about if you're just starting. Just pick one thing that you think you could do or you could try, and just put one foot outside into that. And over time, if you do that consistently, it's not very hard, you'll find that your comfort zone will grow and grow and grow. And you'll be amazed at how that progress can really accumulate over time. It's almost like compound interest, you know, it builds up very quickly and you end up in a position that's really great, you know, and you're not in that kind of unfortunate rite of passage almost that we all have to go through, which is really just information overload when you start out.
Absolutely. I agree. Well, Rob, I think we're around the 1 hour mark now. So I don't want to keep you all day. Maybe we can wrap things up here. And is there anything else? Well, a couple of questions, I guess. Is there anything else that you wanted to add? And where can people find out more about you and what you're working on?
Oh, well, thank you, Mo. Yeah, there's nothing really I want to add, but other than just to say that if anyone's listening and they think I can help them with anything or they'd like to get in touch, please do so. So my blog is gainhigherground.com. So that's gainhigherground.com. Not very good at spelling, as you can tell, but you'll find it if you put it in
gainhigherground.com.
That's it. And just get in touch. There's a contact form there. You can get the ebook that Mo kindly mentioned there as well. You know, no spam or obligations or anything like that. It's just sort of some free content. So, you know, come on over there and it'd be great to see you. And yeah, just get in touch if you think I can assist or you have any questions.
Yeah, well, I highly recommend your site, gainhigherground.com, Rob. And like I said, I've taken a look at your free report, 101 Niches Analyzed, and well worth the read. You know, there's a lot of valuable content in there. So, and I think you have a lot of great ideas and a lot of unique ideas as well. I mean, the things that we've talked about on this podcast, especially in terms of generating traffic and creating products, you know, it just seems like a lot of people are using the same kind of sales method to pitch these crappy make money online courses. So, you know, when you find somebody who has unique ideas that actually work, it's pretty valuable. So, but thanks again for being on the podcast. Like I said, this is the very first one and I'm hoping to improve on my interview skills as I do more of them, but really appreciate your time, Rob. It's been great.
Oh, absolute pleasure. Anytime, Mo. Thanks very much. I've really enjoyed it.
Great. Okay. Thanks, Rob.
Okay, Mo. Yeah, I've got. Think I've recorded that.
Great.